For WKU Public Radio and NPR One, I'm Lamont Jack Pearly, and this is the African American Folklorist. On our last segment, Michael shared with us what ignited his fire to research, document, and present the stories of Logan County's African American history. On this installment, Mr. Morrow breaks down the meaning and vision behind the Sikh Museum, the punishment received by white people who stood up for what's right, and the importance of black supporting black. It's interesting because I joined you guys the other day on a fishing trip, and you said something that resonated with me because I believe I understand that too, because from what I gather, you see the big picture. A lot of times, a lot of us, and when I say us, are just people in general, speak from a specific perspective, omitting everything else out for the purpose of driving their point home. But you seem to see the entire spectrum. Not many people speak about the punishments white people endured for wanting to speak up or not even agreeing with how certain things happen. Mm-hmm. Could you talk to that for us?
Well, you know, this was the thing, one of the main parts of slavery, is that the way you were able to do a lot of things that you do is that you shut the good people up. You make the good people who think what you're doing is wrong keep quiet. And you found that all through our history with white people, is that there were a lot of good white people who disagreed with slavery, who disagreed with segregation, but a lot of times they were punished. When it comes to lynching, there were lynchings of white, but in most cases, they would call them end lovers, and they tar and feather. And a lot of people say, well, what does that mean? Well, tar and feather, you take hot tar, you would put it all over their body, and you would throw feathers on them. Mm. One, it damaged them. It didn't kill them. But two, it showed everybody that they were outcasts.
Right.
That they had went against what, quote unquote, the established white power said was right and ought to be. You might put them on a rail and ride them out of town. What's riding them out of town on a rail? You get a big post, you put them on top of it, and you pack them to the end of the town, and they're gone.
Mm. Do they get tied to the train?
Yeah.
Mm.
You know, you may make them an outcast by not giving them business at their stores, or making their wife an outcast at church, and your kids go to school and pick at their kids. So this is how you kill people who won't stand up for right and stop them from standing up right. It's similar to what's going on now.
Right.
It's the same thing. It's right. That same thing.
Right. Do you find black or white people, for that matter, confused or in disagreement when you explain that there was this sense of good white folk in the process of the black struggle?
You find a lot of white people who want to hide this history. And the reason they want to hide it, because to show what the good people done shines light on what the bad people done.
Mm.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You have a lot of black people who, because of situations, have a lot of hate in their hearts, and they figure all white people are bad. Now, there wasn't no good white people.
Right.
But you know, there ain't no one group or color of people that all of them are good and all of them are bad. You see
right.
what I'm saying? It's an individual thing, and what an individual decides to do. I think King says it best, it's not the color of your skin, it's the content of your character.
Right.
And a good example in Russellville was the jailer when they tried to lynch the first guy. He hit him in a graveyard so the mob couldn't get to him. And then he put him on the train and sent him to Bowling Green for protection. Well, the mob got mad and they wrote letters to the newspaper and they talked about him and they just said, well, they didn't elect him anymore. But in the meantime, he wrote a letter to the editor of the newspaper and he told the newspaper that it was his legal obligation to protect this black guy. But more important than it was his moral obligation.
Mm.
You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, him and his family eventually left Logan County and they became outcasts, but he stood up for what was right and he paid a price for that. And that's what happens a lot of times.
So now, when we came down there to visit you the other day. We see there's an African-American museum. I think it's called Seek now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then there was two other museums across the street around the corner. I believe one was a speakeasy. Talk to us about those.
Well, all of them are the Seek museums. And Seek stands for Struggles for Emancipation and Equality in Kentucky. We used to be called the West Kentucky African-American Heritage Museum and Research Center. That's a mouthful. So we kind of shortened it. And we also wanted a little message in that because it's struggle for emancipation and equality in Kentucky. And these are two different periods. The struggle for emancipation. What was that struggle for emancipation for black slaves in the Commonwealth? And what we seek to do is to pull these stories out to tell that. I tell people all the time when it comes to African-American history and slavery, it's not a straight line. It's not one story fits all. You almost got to take these families and these stories individually and tell them. And all of them tells different aspects of African-American life, but also different aspects of slavery. They tell the good of slavery. Somebody said, what you mean the good? Well, they tell things that people done that wasn't evil.
Right.
I don't think you'll find a lot of good in slavery, but the things that people, whites and blacks, done that wasn't evil. And then I also tell the things that they did do that were evil. But you want to tell all these stories. And what I tell young African-American people and young white people, go find your story. And in finding your story, it'll help you understand you a little better. I had a group of kids at the museum, and I asked them, I said, did your people walk with King? I did. They throw rocks at him.
Mm.
And that's not only with whites, that's with blacks, because you're crazy if you think all blacks supported Dr. King.
True.
You're crazy if you think that all blacks supported ending slavery. So you have to tell these stories and understand. And I think you want to understand why blacks didn't want to end segregation, why blacks didn't want to come out of slavery.
Right.
And tell these stories.
Right.
And
right.
Then we get a clearer understanding of us as a people, as us as a community, as us as a nation.
Right. Right. I mean, I'll save this question because I want to ask you about the blues over there. But before we get to that, some people, some black folk didn't want to end segregation. Some black folk was in alignment with slavery.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that could be, I guess, constituted as two forms of black people. One that were either profiting off of the situation.
Exactly.
Or the other who was comfortable.
Exactly.
Do you think black economic power was eradicated once integration happened?
Yeah. You know, I came up in the community. When I came up in Russellville, in that little area you were in,
mm-hmm.
At one time there were five clubs, there were three black grocery stores, there were six or seven beauticians and barbers. It was a thriving black community. Right now, I'm the only, it's a barbershop down there. There's just two African-American businesses left.
Mm.
And both of us on life support.
Wow.
You know, so one, our people have not learned like other ethnic groups how to support us.
Mm.
We hadn't learned that. You know, these other ethnic groups, they will go 100 miles out of the way to give their people support.
Right.
But we don't do that. And I hate to say this, but a lot of times our people get together and destroy something before they build it.
Mm.
Especially when it relates to us.
Right.
Now, what that comes from, I'm not the one to answer that. I've just been in business for years. I've dealt with it. I've seen it. You know, it's like we'll organize to hurt, but we won't organize to help.
Mm. Now, you did say you're not sure where that comes from, and I'm not going to act as if I know.
Yeah.
But I would venture off to say or ask, do you think it's post-traumatic syndrome of the black experience on the Americas?
I think so, and I will say that I do think sometimes we look at other people and we think that if they get a hit, it hurts us.
Mm.
What they call it, the crab syndrome.
Yeah.
You try to pull people back down instead of try to get people up. And what we've tried to do, what I've tried to do in the area I live in, I've tried to get people up. I've tried to change it and move people up. And in my mind, when you move a lot of people up, it helps the whole neighborhood.
Right.
That's in my mind, but most people don't see it that way.
Oh man, that's unfortunate, and I definitely understand and witnessed it. Thank you for listening. Be sure to listen to the third installment of my conversation with Michael Morrow. For WKU Public Radio and NPR One, I'm Lamont Jack Perley.